The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra, as packed with content and in need of a good kicking as the football that gives our sport its name. In today's show, paintball days out with England's John Terry. No wonder Frank Rijkaard fancies joining Chelsea. Is the Barca master really headed to the bridge? And why is Abramovich booking every hotel in Moscow for May the 21st? We look at the midweek FA Cup action, Sheffield United's Paddy Kenny, and probably the biggest howler since Digby the giant dog got neutered. There's Dr. Sid Lowe in Spain, yet more news from Italy, and something approaching a full preview of the weekend as we salute Paul Ince's MK Dons as they head to Wembley and look forward to the big games in the Premier League. All that plus your post in today's Football Weekly Extra.
This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra.
Paul, Kevin, James and Barry sitting alongside me, P-O-D-D-I-N-G. Welcome aboard, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, James.
Hi there. Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi there. There's a very curious post about you later on.
Oh. Yeah. Did you post this?
No, I didn't, actually. No. I have to say, I'm ashamed to say I didn't post anything this week.
There's no point because Kevin will only remove it.
Exactly, Kevin.
Apparently he's been on the blogs removing posts.
I will not stand for free speech.
You're right to.
Your inky fingers betray you, Kevin. Yes. And that big pair of shears. But to Barry, you have been busy on the post and God bless you for it.
I have, yes. Yeah. I came down off my pedestal. Right. To mix with the little people.
Right.
And got rebuked for it by my boss.
Right.
Apparently I'm only allowed to be nice to them.
Oh, is that so? Is that Sean Ingle?
Yes.
Okay.
So I won't be coming down. I'm going back in my box. I won't be talking to them again.
That's a shame.
How come you never insist that you be nice to us?
You're different, apparently.
James Dott, you're off to Australia momentarily.
Hi, James. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm looking at the clock as we speak.
Yeah, and indeed before we speak.
And before we've been speaking, yeah. I'm about 4 hours away, so.
All right, okay.
Let's get this done nice and sharp.
Right. Okay, and I thought transportation was a thing of the past, but there you go. FA Cup this midweek. Borough-Sheffield, the only exciting thing in the entire game, the own goal, and boy, what an own goal from Paddy Kenny.
Well, I didn't see this game, James, but I noticed on the front page of the sports section today in The Guardian, there was Paddy Kenny with his head in his hands, and under the headline, Kenny's Calamity. So I presumed it was a feature about his new hairstyle. But apparently it isn't.
It isn't. Who did see that?
I've seen his calamitous error. I don't think it was as calamitous.
Oh, it was pretty calamitous.
It was pretty calamitous. But the ball hit the crossbar, was coming back towards him. He had to get a hand to it, which he did. And unfortunately, rather than knock it to one side, he managed to knock it into his own goal.
He just basically palmed it back into his own goal.
Hence the head in hands.
Pretty shocking stuff. And Borough go through. Well, where they're going to be facing Cardiff in the sixth round. You're all interested in the fixtures. I know you know these, James. Bristol Rovers taking on West Brom, Barnsley, Chelsea, Man United, Portsmouth. That's the 11th top flight opposition that Man United have had in the FA Cup.
Consecutively,
James.
I believe, yes.
Coming back to Borough for a minute, to Afonso Alves last night.
Yes.
Got a huge support when he came off. The crowd were angry.
Was that to carry him off? Or
No.
The crowd were angry
if Gareth Southgate were taking him off, which
is
big progress for him. There was one bit where he made this run, which was read by, I think, Arca, who fed him through, and I thought it was really classy, but it's a fleeting moment in an otherwise unexceptional game, but maybe he isn't the disaster that people are preparing to view him as.
Well, I think that was largely based on the way he'd kind of ballooned in size before he turned up.
He didn't seem immense last night, did he?
In the highlights package I saw this morning, he looked a lot slimmer than he did on the day of his signing, when he looked just ridiculously obese.
Maybe he thought he had to balloon in size, given that he was bought to fill Mark Viduka's shirt.
he seemed to show some nice touches in that. But again, it was only a highlights package I saw.
Now, it's good news that he's looking like a decent player up front, because, of course, they're going to be missing Ali Adier for a while after Ali Adier appealed. His 3-game suspension?
And he got 4.
He got 4.
For temerity.
for the frivolous appeal. It's not entirely a frivolous appeal, is it?
No, because it's not.
He was responding to a slap in the face.
Yeah, if he'd been given a booking for that, I don't think Andy would have complained too much at the time.
Even a yellow card seemed that would have been excessive in my book. But then Southgate sort of preempted the failed appeal by saying it was a fair red card. after the match.
He seems to be trying to be the kind of model manager and play along, but in this case he should have been kicking up all kinds of trouble. I mean, big cliche, but would that have happened to Manchester United or Arsenal or Chelsea? I don't think so.
I don't know, but either way, he ends up serving a longer ban than Martin Taylor will be, ludicrously.
That's absurd.
But I don't get the business of extending a ban, not because of what happened on the field, but because you questioned the decision in the first place.
Well, I suppose technically, by the letter of the law, if you raise your hand to someone's face, you have to get sent off. Now, the fact that it was a gentle caress more than anything else, wasn't hardly a violent, right hook or anything.
It's the provocation as well, isn't it?
You're supposed to turn the other cheek. FA are like Jesus,
See, I don't disagree with the FA's silly little men deciding to extend a ban, if they see it fit. There has to be some certain amount of accountability for the clubs going through and appealing like this. But as we mentioned, it was a vicious stroke of the palm.
Ooh. Okay, let's move on then to Chelsea and all sorts of exciting news there. This apparent row between Ten Carter and John Terry. Also, I guess the biggest thing, the fact that Frank Rijkaard is apparently descending on Stamford Bridge.
Yes, possibly. Equally, some people think he might stay at Barcelona. I don't know. I think it's about time for Rijkaard to go from Barcelona. They are coming back a bit this season, but you feel that the peak when they won the European Cup is a height he's not going to reach again. And all that money stuff they have at Stamford Bridge might appeal to him.
It might well do. We'll be speaking to Sid, hopefully, about this very, very shortly. But in the meantime, a source close to Rijkaard quoted as saying Frank is leaving Barcelona at the end of the season. And I think post the Carling Cup, there's a different perspective on Avram Grant's chances of survival, the way that Terry and Lampard basically barge their way back into the side and Terry's subsequent bust-up. Maybe there's the feeling that player power has got out of control at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, it does seem extraordinary that Grant is being talked about, that he's going to be handed his P45 when you consider that Chelsea have only lost 3 games during his tenure. But it seems that if he doesn't bring in any silverware this season, which looks quite likely, that he will be given his cards. So, I mean, a source close to Rijkaard in his journalese usually for Rijkaard's agent or Rijkaard himself speaking off the record. But
of course, it should be pointed out that Chelsea are going to win the Champions League final this May the 21st, and Abramovich has already booked the restaurants to celebrate it.
All right, well, that's fate tempting of the highest order.
Indeed so.
Does that apply pressure to Avram Grant, that kind of thing, do you reckon?
Well, at least he doesn't have to worry about the booking. Surely that's one thing off his mind.
Actually, the thing is, from what I've understood, Abramovich thinks Avram Grant's fantastic. So I think maybe he'll stay, but in some kind of concocted general something or other.
Well, Grant apparently is also talking about being given a lot of money to bring in his own players this summer, because these current players, he didn't buy them, well, the vast majority of them. He wants to bring in his old players. I mean, does that mean Terry and Lampard will be transfer listed, for example?
Interesting.
I'd encourage him to transfer list Terry. I don't think he warrants a place in Chelsea's first 11. I think Carvalho and Alex are better.
Well, in the meantime, they're taking on West Ham at Upton Park on Saturday, which could prove a dangerous game for them. Chelsea, no?
Speaking of dangerous games, John Terry took the team paintballing yesterday, and perhaps if they'd used real guns, that would have helped sort out some of the player issues that are. I mean, I don't know. Have you ever been paintballing?
I have actually once.
It hurts.
It really does. It stings a bit. Yeah.
So if you will be watching with interest to see whose legs are covered with little bruises.
Well, indeed.
On Saturday or Sunday.
Saturday indeed. And Howie 187 posting a question to all Chelsea fans: can Everton catch you in third place? It's not out of the question, is it?
I think we keep on underrating Everton, don't we? 2-0 at Man City. Oh, right. Man City are in decline, but nonetheless.
Well, they just come off a victory of a Man United Old Trafford. I'm not sure if that qualifies as.
Well, I mean, but they've now gone to be eighth in the table. I think the general trend has been downwards. But even so, I think to win as cleanly as that.
It was comprehensive, wasn't it? They completely outclassed Man City, who hardly had a shot in the game.
I hate to say it, but we do kind of set notions in our head. Everton, they're good up to a point, but no more than that. And it takes time to readjust your perceptions, doesn't it?
And that was without Mikel Arteta, who's arguably their most creative player, and he will be back shortly for the business end of the season. So that's got to boost their push.
I'd also like to think there'll be a UEFA Cup ending up in one of the Premier League clubs, if not Spurs, maybe Everton or
Bayern Munich are probably their biggest rivals.
But I mean, Bayern have
Aberdeen held themselves.
facing Fiorentina, I think, in the next round. And Fiorentina just lost Adrian Mutu, who's their big go-to goal scorer, for, I think, one or 2 months. Anyway, we'll talk more about Everton later on when we have a look through some of the other weekend fixtures. In a minute or two, though, it's time to cross, or even sooner, to Sid Lowe, Dr. Sid Lowe, in Spain, and for his view on Rijkaard and all sorts of other exciting things.
Football Weekly Extra.
Part two finds us sitting kind of metaphorically in a waiting room with copies of Grazia and TV Quick and the like as we wait for our appointment with the doctor, Sid Lowe. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
Still flushed with the elation of your doctorate?
Still flushed with something, yes.
Right, OK, good. We were just talking about this whole thing that's hit the papers in England about Frank Rijkaard leaving Barcelona for Chelsea at the end of the season. What do you think?
Well, what I think is that, obviously, as The Guardian's written today, that there are people close to Rijkaard who have admitted that he will walk away from Barcelona at the end of the year, which is something that in a way, actually, the surprise is that he stayed on for this season. And that if he was to walk away, which, as I say, looks increasingly likely, that one of the clubs he would be very interested in going to would be Chelsea. Now, there's one thing I think that gets in the way of that possible move, and that is the strong possibility that Rijkaard will want to have a sabbatical year before he takes anyone on. But, of course, if Chelsea turn up with a lorry load of cash outside his house, I think it's going to be quite hard for him to say no.
Do you think he would work at Chelsea? Do they not need a stronger manager, given some of the pugnacious characters in their dressing room?
Well, this is the question mark, and I think there are a series of areas in which Rijkaard ticks the box Chelsea perfectly, and a series of areas in which there's much more of a question mark. I mean, Abramovich clearly wants a low-profile coach, a guy that doesn't cause him the kind of problems, say, that Jose Mourinho caused him, and Rijkaard fits that bill. He wants a guy who can put stars on the side and play very nice, attractive football. He certainly fits that bill. And on the evidence of the first couple of years at Barcelona, he appears to fit the bill of a guy that can control the egos and keep a harmonious club. Because, of course, for a couple of years, Barcelona were that, and that he was seen as this kind of paternal figure that helped the players through. Now, that's all true, but unfortunately, of course, when you start losing, paternalism starts to be seen as weakness. And in the last year or so, Rijkaard has particularly, in Barcelona, been seen as a weak coach. So much so that we've got this bizarre situation where the model of a coach for Barcelona at the moment, there are some who think that model should be a Mourinho, precisely because they need the kind of iron fist, the kind of strength that Rijkaard quite obviously doesn't have.
Sid, can I ask you about Rijkaard? You're talking about him wanting a year off. Is he in fact a bit burnt out, and would it be a risk for Chelsea to take him without a year off?
Well, he certainly is a little burnt out. I mean, as I mentioned today in the profile piece of him, he's a guy who publicly isn't admitting as such, but privately it's very well known now that he's really been burnt by the experience of Barcelona. He feels very, very tired. He has a series of quite important personal problems involving his family off the pitch, and that's one of the reasons why he wants a sabbatical. Whether or not that means burnt out to the extent that couldn't do a job for Chelsea, or burnt out just to the extent that right now he personally wants a break, is a different question, of course, because sometimes a change of club changes the attitude of the manager involved. And Barcelona is a unique club in terms of the amount of pressure, what Johan Cruyff always famously described as the entourage, which is kind of ironic, really, because Johan Cruyff used to complain about the entourage of people who had nothing to do with the club, sniping and bitching and moaning. And actually, Johan Cruyff, who complained about it, has become the entourage.
Well, he's actually now left. I wanted to ask you about that, or at least come on Ireland wanted to ask you about that, Sid. Cruyff's decision to go to Ajax for next season, where he's going to be joined by Marco van Basten as well, isn't he?
Right, and this is very interesting from the Barcelona point of view, because, of course, one of the things that we were all waiting to see would be who would take over from Rijkaard if he leaves at the end of the season, which, as we just said, it looks increasingly likely. And it was very, very likely that it would be Van Basten at Barcelona. And the reason, of course, was Cruyff. But Cruyff now started to go to Ajax and is taking Van Basten with him, which in a way proves that it was right, that it would have been Van Basten if he'd stayed at Barcelona. The weird thing is, though, in all of this, as I've said before, Cruyff officially doesn't have a post at Barcelona and hasn't had a post at Barcelona for ages. He was that kind of power behind the throne, that kind of Cardinal Richelieu figure, trying to unofficially advise everything that was done by, particularly by Joan Laporta, the president, but also further down the chain, Chicky Baguirre-Stein, the sporting director, and even Frank Rijkaard himself. So Cruyff has walked away from Barcelona, but officially wasn't ever at Barcelona, which I think opens up the very strong possibility that he will continue to have an influence at Barcelona because he will continue to be a kind of unofficial advisor. Now, the big thing that's happened here, of course, is he's going to Ajax to officially do the job that unofficially he was doing at Barcelona anyway.
Be interesting if the two teams meet each other. Barry, you had a question.
It's just said that myself and James and a couple of others here in the pod looked quizzically at each other when you said that Rijkaard had personal problems, so it would be a gross dereliction of journalistic duty if I didn't ask you to elaborate.
Yeah, and well, without getting into too much detail, but and not least because I'll be honest with you, I don't know the exact details of it, but his son has been, I think, not very well for quite a long time, and there's been a sense, I think, that Rijkaard wanted to give more time to his family, but not more time to my family in the way that coaches always stay when they've been sacked. Oh, it's time to, you know, play with my kids. I think this is a more serious issue.
Right. Barcelona had a 1-1 draw with Valencia in the Copa del Rey, to Barry's chagrin.
Yes, they did indeed. And Barcelona had loads and loads and loads of shots, just couldn't put them away. There's a couple of great clips shown by Spanish telly this morning of three or four shots in the same move. One of these, you know, you hit it and it bounces back. Someone else hits it, it bounces back. Someone else hits it and bounces back. But there is yet more talk of conspiracy in Madrid, because when Barcelona did finally get the equaliser in the 95th minute, it was preceded by a serious handball from Samoleto. So you can imagine in Madrid they're jumping up and down, getting very upset. But Barcelona certainly did deserve a draw, I think.
Sorry, this is my phone ringing. There's Les Ferdinand on the line. Should we? Hang on a second.
I really think you should answer it.
Hello, Les. I'm very well. How are you? Oh, OK, nice one. Keeping trim.
Les was in the gym.
Right. Listen, the reason I was calling was I wondered if you had a number for Paul Ince. Right. Oh, that'd be fantastic. We're just recording something at the moment. I wanted to see if I could get hold of him for it. Oh, you're a star. Les, thank you very, very much indeed, not least for calling back. Nice one. Cheerio. All right, then.
How showbiz was that? Are you still there, Sid, or have you...
I'm still here, yeah.
Sorry, I forgot about you. This weekend, Atletico Madrid against Barcelona and Recreativo Huelva against Real Madrid on the Saturday. And what is it, just 2 points now, Real's lead?
It is just 2 points, and this is a mirror image of the, I think it was the second last week of the season last season, or maybe it was the third, when Madrid went away to Recreativo and Barcelona went to Atletico Madrid, and it seemed that Atletico Madrid and Barcelona were going to be playing for Barca to win the league, but Madrid got a very, very late winner against Recreativo, and then Barcelona went and absolutely thumped Atletico 6-0, which is a bit of a strange one, because over the last 4 or 5 years, Atletico have been one of the few sides that have consistently beaten Barcelona. This weekend is particularly interesting because the Atletico coach Javier Aguirre is very definitely on the ropes, of the feeling that Atletico are in crisis, even though their league position is not that awful. But it's just, this is the nature of Atletico Madrid. They see crisis when there aren't crises there, and then they panic at the slightest hint of something bad going on. And I think this is why they get themselves in trouble, because they are a club that kind of embraces losing almost as an identity.
Can you think of any other clubs like that? Anyway.
Sid, about Recreativo, is Cinema Pongol still there? And how is he doing, if he is?
He is still there, and he's had a very good time of it the last 3 or 4 weeks, but actually this season hasn't been his best. It certainly hasn't been as good as it was last year, when of course he was so fantastic. And there's a very obvious reason for that, which is that last season he was playing alongside Uche, who was the guy who scored against Real Madrid at the weekend, is now at Getafe, and he had Santi Cazorla playing on the right wing, who provided more assists than anyone else in Spain last year. And Recre had a very, very good manager, who's now the guy doing brilliant things at Racing. So Cinema hasn't had the season he had last year, and last year he got 12 goals and played really, really well. This year I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think he's on 5, which isn't bad, but Recre are a side who are in trouble, although they have improved in the last 3 or 4 weeks.
More importantly, Sid, how's your bike, the bike you got for Christmas from Real Madrid? Sid's bike wants to know.
It was actually a fold-up bike in a bag, and it's still folded up in a bag. Ah. It's been sifting down with rain ever since then, and the biker did have a look at it, and it does look ever so slightly girly.
All right, Sid, OK. Gift horse, mouth, all that kind of thing. Very good. Listen, we'll be delighted to hear what happens in those two absolutely crucial games for the lead in the Liga when we try and call you up on Monday, if that's OK.
Yeah, that would be fine, yeah.
Fantastic. Enjoy yourself in the meantime, and many thanks, Sid.
Cheers.
Right, on to a couple more posts. Sloth in Tokyo, thanks for pointing out that Manco in Bangkok is actually something really, really rude in Japanese. I'm sorry you spilt your tea when I said it. Lots of discussion on the post this week about films and debate and stuff, and about whether it was a very poor year for the Oscars. Professor Farnsworth saying it can't be any worse than the year Chicago won, all those things. I thought the nadir of these things was the year that Terms of Endearment got the best picture, ahead of Raging Bull, which got nothing. But then that's just my own personal thing.
My personal view is that the year The English Patient won everything was the worst year. That was the worst film I've ever seen.
Really?
By a considerable margin.
Again, I agree with you. I think we're on the same wavelength.
Well, you guys.
The Johnny Cash movie was the worst film I've ever seen. Yeah, Walk the Line.
Was it the worst film you've ever seen?
Well, it was possibly the worst acting performance I've ever seen. The guy who played Johnny Cash was hopeless.
No, I'd have to say La Belle Noiseuse is the worst film I've ever seen.
I mean, given life Johnny Cash led and so on, it's very, very dull, wasn't it?
That's boring.
Right, okay. On a football note, Mart were pointing out that two teams from the A-League qualify for the Asian Champions League. This is exciting for you because you're going to Australia. James Starr.
Well, the A-League's just finished, I believe.
That's right.
And there was shenanigans after the grand final, wasn't there?
There was.
Tony Vidmar covered himself in glory by going to the aftermatch. Well, A, it was his fault his team lost. And then he compounded his error by going to the aftermatch party blacked up, going as God, which is his nickname. And another player on the team went dressed as Hitler, I believe.
It was German André Gumprecht. Yes, right. this was the Mariners.
And they say they've got no sense of
humor. Yeah. But hopefully Rafa will come in dressed as a Goring or someone next time he's in the pod.
Well, on that note, on to Dazinho. But anyway, that's quite interesting. So two teams in the Asian. Is the Asian Champions League, is that quite big, is it?
I think it's going to slowly improve and get a bit bigger.
Everyone always talks about the Asian market, so presumably... No? All right. Dazinho, AC Jimbo, are there any decent books on the whole Calciopoli scandal thingy? I'd be interested in reading an unbiased account. John Foote's brilliant Calcio book, I think, has an updated new edition which features it. So I would heartily recommend that. Isaac Josh, can you guys please check out Fake Empire and pretty much every other tune of theirs, but this one especially, by The National. Paul Doyle, having his own band, has to be worth a mention. That's some voice Paul. I can only guess that you, because you have that deep, luxurious timbered baritone or whatever it is, and so does the lead singer of the National, which is pretty much their USP, although it's obviously not that unique. That's what the point is, that you sound like the lead singer Matt something of who's a close personal
friend. I thought his name must have been Paul Doyle, but that's, which is a very common name,
right? So. No, it's Matt.
No, I've known
Matt
Grew. Never heard of
him. Anyway, they're very fine band and top showbiz chums of mine, of course.
Well, weren't you backstage at a gig?
I was twice.
You didn't really want to talk about it, but you came back from Paris to record a pod, and you were in all sorts of bother.
The thing is that fans of The National will be aware that two of their number are identical brothers, twins, in fact, and I mistook one for the other. And I said, good Lord, it's lucky I thought I was talking to the other one, and went on this kind of note for a while, and it turned out it was the other one.
I committed a worse faux pas than that on the subject of celebrity chum. Or sorry, I didn't commit it, but a celebrity chum of mine committed.
You're losing Paul Doyle.
Comedy's Dylan Moran.
Oh, yeah.
There was two girls, identical twin sisters, one of whom was pregnant and the other wasn't.
So they weren't that identical.
He went to the one who wasn't pregnant and said, oh, how long before it's due?
Oh. Well, that's fair enough, because her sister was pregnant.
Yeah, but he basically called her fat.
Right. Okay, Edmundo3.
Oh, my phone's ringing. Oh, it's my it's my mum.
Right. Boring. And Edmundo3, James, can you ask the oh-so-sensitive soul, Mr. McCara, why he's... Oh, this is about you taking criticism of your articles out of there. It's not you, is it, Kevin?
No, I've removed them all personally. No, I think it's done by a moderator. I don't even know what the posts were, but I removed nothing from the blog.
Well, my one was something about how you don't research your articles.
Well, that's fair comment.
Mine was littered with obscenities, which is probably why I was removed.
Right, okay, and a final post for now. Seagull Javier in Madrid says, Paul Ince has just steered MK Dons to Wembley in the Johnston Paints Trophy. Oh, that'll put a nice gloss on their season. That bit's mine.
Is that why we have an MK Dons section today? Just so you could get in that pun.
Their fans will be just as pleased as the big teams that get there. And just anyone can get to Wembley now. I mean, Tottenham won there the other day. Anyway,
if you know about, I've been brushing up on the Johnston Paints Trophy.
Right. Have you? I'll put
a lead on it.
I was going to do a quick Italy round. Should I do that before the end of part three? Italy midweek games. Inter stayed 9 points clear, so pretty much sewed up the title by drawing 1-1 with Roma. Inter haven't won now in three games. They also lost Maxwell, their left-back who turned an ankle. They've lost a lot of defenders late, so that's bad news ahead of the Liverpool game in 2 weeks. Two very silly red cards in those two games. First off, in the other big game being the Turin derby between Torino and Juventus. Mexes was sent off for Roma just before Inter equalised at the end. The second yellow card was for crashing into Crespo, who made a lot of it. But the first one was for, he'd gone off for treatment and he had to come back to the halfway line to come back on. And he cut the corner. You know, he basically just ran across the corner of the pitch and the referee gave him a yellow card for it. What a stiffy. Anyway, and the other one was in the Turin derby, which was a 0-0 draw, and Nedved at the end, Pavel Nedved, he got crashed into by Komoto. Komoto's then talking to the referee, and Nedved just goes up to him, grabs him by the back of his head, grabs a fist of his locks, and just yanks him away by his hair, under the referee's nose. How stupid was that? Very.
Very, very stupid.
Very stupid.
Sorry.
Frivolous, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, and there you go. There's some talk in the Italian papers that they have already agreed terms with Matteo Flamini to pick him up from Arsenal on a free, because he hasn't yet secured his new deal.
Who have?
Juventus, because they're big on getting players on frees in Italy, because they haven't got a bean.
Flamini and Sissoko.
There's also talk in Italy, although I believe this may already have disappeared again, that Tom Hicks, once he's liberated himself from the ongoing mess at Liverpool, he's going to buy out Roma, whose backers, Italpetroli, are currently lurching towards meltdown in a financial sense. So there you go. Interesting. That's all for part two. In part three, we're not quite sure, but we'll see in a second or two.
The Guardian Football Weekly Extra Podcast.
Right, part three then. Now, James Dart, you just made a very good point. The Johnston Paints final isn't actually this weekend.
It's not, no, because the northern section is still in the midst, in the throes of the semi-final.
Oh, right, OK.
Between
a pitch battle between two seaside resorts.
Between Morecambe and Grimsby, yeah, with Grimsby holding the upper hand, I believe, after the first leg.
I think they're 1-0 up.
Wow, you guys.
Is Grimsby a seaside resort, or is it just a fishing?
Well, it's more Cleethorpes. It would be more Cleethorpes, I suspect. But Grimsby would be more of the harbour side for its fish factories.
Yeah. Have you ever been in Grimsby, Jimbo?
No, I haven't, actually. Yeah, no.
Me neither.
But I'd love to go there. To Grimsby. But anyway, listen, we've left a message with Paul Ince, just to keep you updated. We've left a message with Paul Ince, but that was before I found out that the game wasn't this weekend. So maybe he'll call back, and if not, then we didn't want to speak to him anyway. We'll speak to him when it's, you know, when we got time, when it's the actual game. But I tell you what we can do, and that's look through.
Is this our attempt to rival the Times, where they have all sorts of big names?
They do, don't they? But they're going to be choking on our dust this week. Right, listen, let's talk about the weekend's games in the Premier League, which will, I understand, be going ahead. Bolton-Liverpool for a start, because how about this? Steven Gerrard, his outspoken remarks on Thursday morning about how he's ashamed. He's getting tired of saying the same thing over and over again. Know that feeling. We always believe we have the players to challenge for the title. We wanted that more than any other trophy, and it's not good enough. And he says, I'm not even going to pretend that even winning that trophy of the Champions League, and we're a long way away from doing that at the moment, would make up for the disappointment of our league campaign. And this does seem to be a bit of a turning point in Liverpool's fortunes, no? Because at this point, Rafa, who's always banging on about the Champions League, etc., has now got his most influential player saying, look, this is not good enough, and even if you win Europe's biggest prize, it's not going to be good enough.
Well, fairness, Rafa has said it himself. He said he knows the priority is the Premier League, but he doesn't feel he's been given the resources to win that yet. In the meantime, he'll.
But isn't that what he said before they gave him the resources in?
Well, no, they
May.
Still haven't given him enough resources to win it. They made a step in the right direction by giving him money to buy Fernando Torres and that. But when you look at Man United, who, for example, who's got two defensive midfielders who cost the same as Fernando Torres, then right. they can't really compete.
There will be a flurry of posts at this point saying that the team that are actually leading the Premier League right now spent less. Than Liverpool did over the summer, and comprehensively have spent.
They did over the summer, over the last few years. I mean, the team isn't just built over 3 months in the summer.
Arsenal spending is very, very small each year because they always sell. I mean, they're always selling Vieira or Romary or someone, you know. So whereas maybe Benitez hasn't had that option. There's no one he could trade really. Maybe players like Sissoko and so on. But I think he spent a fair amount. I mean, I think, for example, Ryan Babel's a good player, but. Not immediately. So that's 10 million as a long term prospect.
Well, Arsenal spent 10 million on Theo Walcott and on the same reasoning.
Yeah, but maybe Arsenal's position was different and they could afford that. I think Liverpool couldn't afford the time.
Apparently they couldn't afford it, which is one of the reasons why they're not challenging for the Premier League. Mm. The Liverpool season, though, will be, I think, determined over how Rafa deals with their run of fixtures at the end of March. They go to Old Trafford, to Arsenal, they play the Merseyside Derby, and if they beat Inter, they play the Champions League quarterfinals, all within four matches. How he rotates or whether he keeps the strongest 11 for that period will be quite decisive.
How do you fancy their chances against Bolton on Sunday?
I think they'll beat Bolton, definitely. Really? I think Bolton are going to go down. If you look at their fixtures, they're the only team of the ones down there who have to play all of the big four before the end of the season. And having failed to replace Anelka, I think they'll go down.
Also, Liverpool can pick a strong team because there's no Champions League game for them as well. They've got a free week.
Yeah. Right. Well, they play West Ham, I think, midweek.
Oh, do they? Oh, sorry, pardon.
But still, they're not going to.
It's not as bad as playing.
They should be able to handle fixtures against Bolton and West Ham.
Now, elsewhere in the Premier League, there's Arsenal against Aston Villa. Ooh, that's a big one. Villa's doing well this season, possibly in with a shout for fourth spot. 3 points behind fourth place Everton at the moment.
I think they're in with a very good chance of finishing fourth. I think Everton are in with a decent shout of finishing third, to be honest. Mm. And I think Liverpool could get worse before they get better. I think they could finish sixth, seventh, possibly even eighth. I could well be proved wrong and end up looking stupid, heaven forbid. But I could see Liverpool having a disastrous close to the season.
What about Arsenal, Aston Villa, though, this weekend?
Villa are strength. They've been better away from home all season. They have to play, most of the big teams away from home before the end of the season, and they've got a very easy run of fixtures at home. But they've got the speed to play on the break, and hope Arsenal will come at them, and with Agbonlahor and Ashley Young, I mean, they could get something there.
Great.
Expect Arsenal to win, but it wouldn't shock me if Villa got
because Man United have got Fulham away, which you'd figure them to get the win.
Yeah.
So that's crucial for Arsenal that they don't drop points.
You also think it's going to be a very intense atmosphere because of the injury to Eduardo and the points dropped at Birmingham. Yeah. I think the Emirates will be, dare I say, unusually inflamed.
Okay. Now, Birmingham taking on Tottenham. Spurs going to continue their cup excitement?
Depends if they've been over-celebrating, which they very much have been. I think they're still partying now at the moment. So they should still have enough for them, I think. Birmingham might have some kind of hangover after the Arsenal exertions, I think, both mentally and physically. But obviously, the same can be said for Spurs.
No. Have Tottenham players been pictured falling out of trendy West End night spots, or
one or two dozen? Yes.
Oh, right.
Ledley King, I think, was the
Jermaine Genus and
Jermaine Genus.
Yeah.
Fairness, that was a full week before the game. It's not going to have any impact on their. It
went on for about 48 hours. I think.
Four or five days before a game. A professional athlete can handle that.
Right.
Old school footballers would be able to deal with it, but whether or not our overpaid modern day players can do it, I don't know. It'd be a good test of stamina.
I've got a feeling too that Wanderama's for all his great work is only a small way into the redevelopment of Spurs, and I'm not sure that they'll win at Birmingham.
Interesting. Man City are playing Wigan, and all sorts of interesting things here. Thaksin Shinawatra went back to Thailand and is presumably going to free up the countless billions that he's got locked up there.
He went with his ambassadors Kasper Schmeichel and Kelvin Etuhu this morning to much acclaim in Bangkok, where he was immediately arrested and then subsequently bailed.
Well, that was always on the cards, wasn't it?
Yes, of course.
And the idea is that since the recent elections, he's now persona grata again.
Exactly. Well, he wouldn't have gone back if there was any chance he was going to be thrown in jail to rot and fester for 25 years. So, he looks like he's going to get to free up 800 million, which would buy no end of good players for Manchester City.
Well, indeed so. Indeed so. I met that man, Sven-Göran Eriksson, on Tuesday.
Oh, you did indeed.
Yes,
you told me about
did.
This this morning. Yes. You really are rubbing shoulders with the
Richard Fitch. Great and the good.
So you were interviewing him for your show.
Satanta's Friday football show this Friday.
Which I won't be able to watch because Satanta has cancelled my subscription without me asking them to.
Well, yeah, after your rude comments last week,
bill.
I'm not surprised.
What happened?
I have paid the bill.
Right. Anyway, and
what did he say, James?
Well, thanks, Paul.
Well, let's talk about my subscription being cancelled, which is far
he
more
said,
important.
He said some interesting things, actually. He didn't seem too warm about Sir Alex, his neighbour across town at United. He said, but I asked him why Man City, and he said that basically it was the first job he got offered. So it wasn't, I wanted to take a sabbatical. Yeah. He said he hated being out for a year. He just wasn't used to it at all. He was really frustrated by it, and he didn't get many offers, and then he corrected himself and he said no, he didn't get any offers until Man City from England. He wanted to stay in England. He was really delighted, and he was amused by the way that he's gone from the kind of donkey camp to the genius of football camp.
He's not in the genius of football camp.
Well,
surely.
in certain circles he is. You remember the way that he's turned Man City around. Oh, we were all wrong about Sven, etc, etc, etc.
Well,
that was a really old man style harumph by God.
Anyway,
And doesn't England record now look fantastic?
Exactly, yeah. So. And he made one or two kind of... But he refused to talk about that, actually. He said, no, I have my view about that, but I'm not going to say anything.
He's an amazing man. I remember someone going out for dinner with him and he was last to leave. I mean, I'm not suggesting he was blind drunk or anything, but he enjoys a good social occasion.
Well, in Italy, among journalists in Rome, he was famous for his skills as a trencherman. He could, be there quaffing cigars and smoking brandy or something along those lines until the wee small hours with the best of them and swapping stories about manly behaviour, if you'll understand my meaning in that. Anyway, so, best of luck to Sven and Wigan too, in my impartial fashion, but you'd have to figure they would get back to winning ways at the City of Manchester Stadium in that match. Derby Sunderland, Barry?
Well, it's worth mentioning that Roy Keane has put 7 players on the transfer list this week.
Last time he did that was over I was going to call it a happy slapping, but it was...
it was a happy slapping, but not in that way.
Right.
Well, David Connolly, Ian Hart, Ross Wallace, Graham Kavanagh, Greg Halford, Stanislav Varga, most of them he signed when he took over originally. So they did a job for him, helped him get promoted, and I think he gave them a chance to prove themselves this year. They failed to do so, so now he's going to let them go.
Ian Hart now, in fairness. Ian Hart was at a complete loose end. He got him up to Newcastle at the start of the season, gave him a few weeks trial, then gave him a 1-year contract, and then a few months later. So what a terrible mistake.
One that's raised a few eyebrows is Lee Miller, who's been transfer listed. Now, it turns out that Keane has said he's transfer listed him because of his poor timekeeping, that he's late for training, not once, not twice, not 3 times, but he's constantly late for training. And Keane doesn't stand for lack of punctuality. So, I mean, if you, James, were sort of...
under his wing.
I'd be sitting here talking to Rob Curling, and you'd be in the reserves. But he said, Lee Miller, there is a way back for him, but he does have to pull his socks up. So
okay, well that's interesting.
If there are any Derby fans who listen to this podcast, I'd be interested to hear if they think they can avoid beating Sunderland's record of the lowest ever points haul.
That's a good shot.
They look like a dead cert at the moment.
Especially after Paul Jules.
You have to get 15 points. Right?
Especially after Paul Jules' comments last week when he was just embarrassed and ashamed of them. I mean, he went to town on them and he's reiterated it during
the Billy Davis school of motivation. My players are rubbish. They're out of their depth.
But surely he knew that when he took the job.
You'd have thought so. Actually, I did see an interview with him on, I think it was Football Focus, where he was interviewed in his kitchen and he didn't have any metal forks.
Why? Did he have?
Plastic cutlery.
Why?
But I don't know, perhaps it's
he just
to do
bought
with
the house and it didn't come with cutlery.
It's nothing to do with the state of Derby's affairs this season.
Well, when he kept Wigan
I'm aware of.
when he kept Wigan up.
Did he have shoelaces?
It was just been burgled.
Slip-ons, I don't know.
I remember when he kept Wigan up last season, a story appeared in one of the tabloids a couple of days later. He was pictured out canoodling with a woman who wasn't Mrs. Jewell, so perhaps he replaced all the cutlery in his kitchen.
Ah, I see your point. Mm. Right. Okay.
But what he should have done, or what he would have done, no, seriously, Rafa Benitez, as we know, is currently operating without a number 2 since Paco, his name I can't pronounce, left. And Rafa, apparently there's a bit of a rift between him and his players because he's not the most personable chap. He likes to keep his distance from his players, whereas Paco was the middleman between them. Various people suggested Paul Jewell, after he left Wigan, would be ideal for that role as a number 2, being a happy and likeable guy with football knowledge, but Rafa vetoed it.
Oh.
And that's how Jewell ended up at Derby. But it might have been a mistake to veto
that's
that.
That's top inside info there, Paul.
Yeah.
Good one. And I like your records too, by the way. I'm not quite sure what to do then with the MK Dons bit, which, James Dart, your plane is leaving in how long?
We're looking at about 8 hours and counting.
Oh, so. All right. There's nothing.
Well, I think seeing as James has gone to
he's
the trouble
all
of
the way in here
and writing a whole post-it note.
Right, well, let's hear about the MK Dons, because
as you know,
Ince hasn't called back yet. He's big, busy.
So I'm just a second-rate Paul Ince then, basically.
No, I think you bring a more objective angle to the whole thing. I mean, basically,
and
MK
you do Dons, always insist on us calling you the governor.
He basically took over MK Dons after his brilliant turnaround of things at Macclesfield, yes?
Yes, it was a situation where he was expected to really turn things around at Macclesfield. I mean, that they had a decent sort of budget all of a sudden and they moved up the table really impressively. He lost just 8 games in his spell there and he's lost only 8 of 41 at the MK Dons again this season. Again, right. he's got the top 2 teams in League 2. You've got MK Dons and you've got Peterborough. They're expected to be there. They've got the biggest budgets just about in League 2. But at the end of the day, you can't argue with the fact that they're top of the division at the moment. They've just knocked Swansea out of the Johnson Paints Trophy. Swansea top of League One by a fair distance. And he's done a strong job. And while most fans in the lower leagues have an extreme dislike for the MK Dons, I'm sure the MK Dons don't really
care
about
that. Why is that? Because of the kind of slightly artificial way they came into being, or what?
Because they're a franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, but also, I suppose MK Dons might have been in trouble because they have spent quite a lot to get relegated.
They have.
And their vision is having decent crowds and a fairly big operation. So Ince has really ridden to the rescue in that sense.
Yes, well, I mean, he was linked with several championship jobs and even Derby, I believe, earlier in the season when Billy Davis left.
Can I tell you, my top inside info is that he was assured he was going to get the job. And so that was a very real possibility.
But he's shown fantastic loyalty, therefore, to stick with MK Dons. And
no, the thing was that the job went to...
Why didn't he get it if he was assured?
Well, no, he was assured, and then 24 hours later they announced somebody else. All but right. He had been told.
Ah, so he hasn't shown fantastic loyalty. He's
no.
just...
Well, I don't know. Possibly he would have said no anyway, but that offer was made. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we could be seeing Ince in the Premier League quite soon as a manager.
Possibly. He's doing his apprentice, as it were, apprenticeship, and he's doing a pretty strong job.
Right. All credit to him, then. Listeners, a particularly tight and well-rehearsed pod this week. I hope you enjoyed our new direction. Many, many thanks to you for being with us for it, and to our full pod crew, Kevin McCarra.
I was going to answer Scottish football queries.
There was a question, and I think it was actually from Dazinho. I'm not sure. But anyway, it was all about Scottish football.
Yes, about who's going to win the Scottish Premier League, and I don't know much about the teams. I haven't seen the Rangers or Celtic a great deal. However, I've seen the fixture list. Celtic don't have a home game now till 5th of April, and Rangers don't have an away game till about the same time. So Rangers, 4 points ahead. If they win their home games, you would think they'll put a lot of pressure on Celtic. It's a bizarre thing. Celtic can't play Dundee United at home because Dundee United are in the League Cup final. But however, it's an extraordinary advantage for Rangers to have that stretch to try and build a lead.
In the SPL? Because, you know, Celtic will have away games, you know, whoever, Hearts, Gretna, Inverness, beat them. Does it make that much of a difference?
Well, it does really.
Celtic,
for example, drew one each at Hearts, where Rangers won 4-0 last night. Celtic lost 3-2 Inverness, having led 2-0. And on Saturday, they're playing Hibs away. So I think these are difficult games for the big teams, because, of course, it's an occasion for Inverness or Hibs or whoever's facing them.
OK, I'll get back in my box.
Anybody else got any unfinished business? No? OK. Kevin McCarra, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
James Dart, have a wonderful holiday in Australia.
Thank you, I'm off.
And you, Paul Doyle, thank you very much.
Thank you too, James.
Thank you, Barry Glendinning.
You're very welcome.
And thank you too, Gambi, there in the production booth. No thanks to you, Paul Ince. Can't believe it.
Big thanks to Les Ferdinand.
Big thanks to big Les Ferdinand. And I don't think anyone's surprised, because he is that type of top chap who will step in when a showbiz friend's got a, you know, question or query. And we'll be back on Monday with a further update from the world of football. Bye for now.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.